That is why great is added to mixed. For the one who looks to one goal only is simple, unmixed, and truly smooth. But the one who sets before himself many ends of life is great, mixed, and in truth hairy. For this reason, the oracles present Jacob, the practicer of noble things, as smooth, and Esau, the practicer of the most shameful things, as hairy. Gen 27:11. On account of this mixed and hairy crowd, compounded of jumbled and confused opinions, the mind, though able to run swiftly, when it was fleeing Egypt, the region of the body, and to take possession of virtue's inheritance in 3 days by a threefold light. Memory of things past, clear perception of things present, and hope for things to come, instead wears away a span of 40 years, going around in a circle and wandering because of its versatility, when what was needed was the direct route, which is the most effective. This is the one who delights not merely in a few forms of desire, but insists on leaving out nothing whatsoever, so that he may pursue, through and through, the entire genus in which every species is comprised. For it is said, the mixed multitude among them desired a desire of the genus itself, not of some one species, and sitting down they wept, Num 11:4. For the understanding, growing feeble, comprehends this, and when it cannot obtain what it craves, it weeps and groans, although it ought rather to rejoice at failing to attain passions and sicknesses, and to consider the lack and absence of them great good fortune. But indeed even the dancers of virtue's chorus are accustomed to writhe and weep, either lamenting the misfortunes of the foolish, because of their natural sociability and love of humanity, or out of sheer overflowing joy. And this joy arises whenever a sudden downpour of blessings, massed together and never even expected, comes flooding down all at once. It is from this, I think, that the poetic phrase was spoken. She laughed through tears. For joy, the best of the good emotions, falling upon the soul unexpectedly, makes it greater than it was before, so that the body can no longer contain its bulk, but being pressed and squeezed, drips forth streams which are customarily called tears, concerning which it is said in the hymns, "You will feed us with the bread of tears," P.S. 79:6, "and my tears have become my bread day and night," P.S. 41:4. For the visible tears of inward and serious laughter are food for the understanding. Whenever the divine longing, melting within, turns the created being's lament into a song of hymn to the uncreated. Some, then, cast off this mixed and hairy crowd and wall themselves off from it, delighting only in the God-loving race. But others form a partnership with it too, thinking it right to steer their own life as a mediator, setting it on the border between human and divine virtues, so as to touch both the virtues that are real and those that are merely apparent. The character who lives by this second doctrine is the one customarily named Joseph, with whom, when he is about to bury his father, there go all the servants of Pharaoh, and the elders of his house, and all the elders of Egypt, and all the household of Joseph, and his brothers, and all his father's house. Gen 50:7-8. You see that this political character is stationed midway between Pharaoh and his father's house, so that he may lay equal hold both on the bodily things, that is, Egypt, and on the things of the soul, which are treasured up in his father's house. For whenever he says, "I belong to God," Gen 50:19, and the other things akin to this, he abides by the customs of his father's house. But whenever he mounts the second chariot, Gen 41:43, of the mind that thinks itself to reign Pharaoh, he sets up again the delusion of Egypt. More wretched, however, is the one thought more glorious, the king who rides in the leading chariot. For not to excel in noble things is the most conspicuous disgrace, so that carrying off second prize in such matters is the lighter evil. You could learn his wavering between both sides also from the oaths he makes, swearing at one time by the health of Pharaoh, Gen 42:16, and at another time, conversely, not by the health of Pharaoh, Gen 42:15. But the oath that contains the negation would be a decree of his father's house, which is ever bent on putting the passion to death and wishing it dead, while the other belongs to Egypt, to which it is dear that this passion be kept alive. That is why, although so great a multitude went up together with him, Scripture did not call it a mixed crowd. Because to the one who sees to the utmost degree and loves virtue, everything that is not virtue or virtue's work seems mingled and confused together, whereas to the one who is still creeping along the ground, the prizes of earth in themselves are reckoned worthy of love and honor. The lover of practical wisdom, as I said, will wall himself off from the one who, like a drone, is recognized as spoiling their useful labors and therefore tags along. But he will welcome those who follow for the sake of imitation, out of zeal for noble things, allotting to them their fitting portions. Of the men who went with me, he says, Eshkol, Aner, Mamer, these shall take a portion, Gen 14:24. By these he means characters who are lovers of contemplation. For Eshkol bears a name that symbolizes fire, a token of good natural endowment, since a good nature is bold and fiery and takes firm hold of whatever it grasps. Aner belongs to the lover of contemplation, for it is translated eyes, since the eyes of the soul also are opened wide by good cheer. The inheritance of both of these is the contemplative life, called Mamer, which by translation is named from vision. And for the contemplative, seeing is fitting and most proper to him. Whenever the mind, employing these as trainers, leaves nothing lacking for its exercise, it accompanies and runs together with perfect practical wisdom, neither exceeding it nor being exceeded, but walking in step with it, weighed exactly equal. This is shown by the oracle, where it is clearly said that the two of them went and came up together, to the place which God had told him of, Gen 22:3. A surpassing equality of virtues indeed, when labor competes with good natural condition, and skill with self-taught nature, and both prove able to carry off equal prizes of virtue. Just as if painting and sculpture no longer, as now, produced only motionless and lifeless works, but had the power to make the things painted and molded move and live. For then these arts, which of old were merely imitative of nature's works, would seem now to have themselves become nature's. And he who has been lifted up so far aloft on high will no longer allow any part of his soul to linger below among mortal things, but will draw them all along with him, as though suspended from a single cord. That is why an oracle of this sort was given to the sage. Go up to your Lord, you and Aaron and Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, Exod. 24, 1. This is something like, go up, O soul, to the vision of being, harmoniously, rationally, willingly, fearlessly, lovingly, in the holy and perfect numbers of the sevenfold multiplied tenfold. For Aaron is said in the laws to be the prophet of Moses, spoken word prophesying on behalf of the understanding. Nadab is translated willing, one who honors the divine not out of compulsion, and Abihu, my father. This is the one who needs God to govern him not as a master, through folly, but rather as a father, through wisdom. These are the bodyguard powers of the mind worthy to reign, whose lawful part it is to escort the king, accompanying him. But indeed it is a fearful thing for a soul to go up to the vision of being by itself, not knowing the way, lifted up by ignorance together with boldness, and great are the falls that come from lack of knowledge joined with much rashness. And this is why Moses prays to have God himself as guide upon the road that leads to him. For he says, if you yourself do not go with me, do not bring me up from here. Exod 33:15. Because every motion without the divine is harmful, and it is better to remain here below, wandering through mortal life like the great mass of humankind, than to lift oneself up toward heaven and be overturned by arrogance, just as happened to countless sophists, who supposed wisdom to be the persuasive invention of arguments and not the truest conviction concerning realities. Perhaps also something like this is meant. Do not lift me aloft, granting me wealth or reputation or honors or offices or any of the other so-called strokes of good fortune, unless you yourself intend to come along with me. For these things often bring their possessors either the greatest benefit or the greatest harm. Benefit, whenever God leads the way for the judgment. Harm, whenever the opposite is the case. For to countless people, the so-called goods, which are not truly good, have become the cause of irreparable evils. But the one who follows God necessarily has as fellow travelers God's attendant words, which it is customary to call angels. It is said, at any rate, that Abraham went along with them, escorting them on their way, Gen 18:16. O most beautiful reciprocity, by which the one escorting was himself escorted, giving back exactly what he received, not one thing in exchange for another, but that very same thing, ready for mutual exchange. For as long as he is not yet made perfect, he uses the divine word as guide of the road. For there is an oracle. Behold, I send my angel before your face to guard you on the way, that he may bring you into the land which I have prepared for you. Give heed to him and listen to him. Do not disobey him, for he will not draw back from you, for my name is upon him, Exod 23:20-21. But when he arrives at the height of knowledge, running with full effort, he will match the pace of the one who formerly led the way. For thus both will become followers of God, the leader of all, with no one holding a different opinion still accompanying them, but even Lot, who bent aside the soul that was capable of growing upright and unbending, being separated off. Now Abraham, Moses says, was 75 years old when he went out from Haran, Gen 12:4. About the number 75, for it holds a meaning in harmony with what has already been said, we will speak precisely later. But first let us investigate what Haran is, and what it means to emigrate from that region. No one who has encountered the laws is likely to be ignorant that Abraham first left the land of the Chaldeans and settled in Haran, and then, when his father died there, he moved on from that place too, so that he had already left two locations. What then must we say? The Chaldeans are held to have worked out astronomy and the casting of horoscopes with more thoroughness and distinction than other peoples, fitting earthly things to celestial ones and heavenly things to those on earth, and displaying, as if through the music of reasoned discourse, the most harmonious symphony of the universe, through the fellowship and sympathy of its parts with one another parts separated in place, but not divided in kinship. These men supposed that this visible universe was the only thing among the things that exist, either being itself God, or containing God within itself as the soul of the whole. And by fashioning fate and necessity into gods, they filled human life with much impiety, teaching that apart from visible things, nothing whatsoever is the cause of anything, but that the revolutions of the sun and moon and the other stars dispense good things and their opposites to each of the things that exist. Moses, however, seems to endorse the fellowship and sympathy of the universe's parts with one another, in declaring that the world is one and created, for since it has come into being and is one, it is reasonable that the elemental substances underlying all the things brought to completion should be the same throughout its parts, just as happens with unified bodies whose members are interlinked. But he disagrees with them about the belief regarding God. For neither the world nor the soul of the world is the first God, nor are the stars or their choral dances the most venerable causes of what befalls human beings. Rather, this universe is held together by invisible powers, which the craftsmen stretched out from the farthest bounds of earth to the ends of heaven, taking care that what had been well bound should not be loosed, for the powers of the universe are unbreakable bonds. Therefore, if somewhere in the legislation it says, God is above in heaven and below on earth, Deut. 4:39, let no one suppose this is said of him with respect to his being, for it is right that being should contain, not be contained, but of his power, by which he established, arranged, and set the universe in order. This power is, properly speaking, goodness itself. It has driven away from itself envy, which hates virtue and hates beauty, and it generates the gracious gifts by which it brought what did not exist into being and made it manifest. For being, when it is merely imagined through opinion, in truth is nowhere to be found, so that the most truthful of oracles is the one in which it is said, here am I, pointed to as though it could be pointed to, seen as though it could be seen, before you, Exod 17:6. For he is before all that has come into being, standing outside it, and involved with none of the things that come after him. Having said this, in order to overturn the Chaldean opinion, he thinks it necessary to turn about and call back to the truth those whose minds still chaldeas, beginning his teaching thus. Why, he says, you remarkable people, do you suddenly rise so high from the earth and go swimming into the heights, overreaching the air and walking the upper sky, as though you could accurately track the motions of the sun, the revolutions of the moon, and the harmonious, celebrated dances of the other stars? These things are greater than your conceptions can grasp, since they have been allotted a more blessed and more divine portion. Come down, then, from heaven, and once you have come down, do not again go examining the forms of earth and sea and rivers, of plants and animals, but investigate only yourselves and your own nature, and do not settle anywhere else rather than in yourselves. For by observing the affairs of your own household, what rules in it, what obeys, what is ensouled, what is soulless, what is rational, what is irrational, What is immortal? What is mortal? What is better? What is worse? You will immediately gain clear knowledge of God and his works. For you will reason that just as there is mind in you, so there is mind in the universe as a whole. And just as your mind, having taken up rule and mastery over what belongs to you, has rendered each of your parts obedient to itself, so too the mind that has clothed itself in dominion over the whole steers the world by sovereign law and justice, caring not only for the more distinguished things, but also for those that seem less conspicuous. So migrate from your meddling curiosity about the heavens and dwell, as I said, in yourselves, leaving behind the land of the Chaldeans, that is, opinion, and moving instead to Haran, the region of sense perception, which is the bodily house of the mind. For Haran is translated cavern, and caverns are symbols of the openings of sense perception. For in a sense, the eyes are the openings and burrows of sight, the ears of hearing, the nostrils of smells, the throat of taste, and the whole structure of the body is the burrow of touch. Stay a while longer with these faculties, then, settle down, take your leisure, and determine as precisely as you can the nature of each. And once you have learned what is good and what is worse in each, flee the one and choose the other instead. But when you have examined your own household with full precision and have illuminated the meaning that each of its parts holds, rouse yourselves and seek the migration from this place. A migration that proclaims not death but immortality. Of this migration, you will observe clear evidence even while still confined within your bodily and perceptible burrows. At times in deep sleep, for when the mind withdraws and slips away from the senses and everything else pertaining to the body, it begins to converse with itself, gazing upon truth as in a mirror, and having washed away everything it had impressed upon itself from sense-perceived images, it becomes inspired with the most truthful divinations of the future through dreams, and at times even while waking. For when the mind is seized and led by one of the contemplations of philosophy, it follows that contemplation and, no doubt, forgets everything else that belongs to the bodily mass. And if the senses stand in the way of a precise vision of the intelligible, those who love to contemplate take care to strip away their interference. They close their eyes, stop up their ears, and see fit to check the impulses of the other senses as well, spending their time in solitude and darkness, so that the eye of the soul, to which God gave the power to see intelligible things, may not be overshadowed by anything perceptible. Having learned in this way what it means to leave the mortal behind, you will also be instructed in true beliefs about the uncreated. Unless you fail to recognize that your own mind, once it has stripped off body, sense perception, and speech, is able to see the things that are in their nakedness apart from these. And that the mind of the whole, God, stands outside all of nature, containing it, not contained by it, and has gone beyond it not merely in conception, as a human mind does, but in his very essence, as befits God. For our mind has not fashioned the body but is the work of another, and so it is contained, as in a vessel, by the body. But the mind of the whole has begotten the whole universe, and the maker is greater than the thing made, so that it could not be contained by what is inferior to it, not to mention that it would not be fitting for a father to be contained in his son, though a son may grow through the care of his father. Thus, moving forward little by little, the mind will arrive at the father of piety and holiness, first departing from the casting of horoscopes, which had persuaded it to suppose that the world is the first God rather than a creation of the first God, and that the courses and motions of the stars are the causes of misfortune and, conversely, of happiness for human beings. Then, coming to the examination of itself and philosophizing about its own household, about body, about sense perception, about speech, and learning, in the poet's words, that both good and evil are wrought within one's own halls, the mind next cuts a path from itself, and through this path hopes to comprehend the Father of the universe, hard to conjecture and hard to trace. And having come to know itself precisely, it will perhaps come to know God too, no longer remaining in Haran, among the instruments of sense perception, but turned back upon itself. For it is impossible, while still moving in a manner governed by the senses rather than the intellect, to arrive at the contemplation of that which is. For this reason, the character stationed in the best rank before God, whose name is Samuel, does not teach Saul the rules of kingship while he is still lingering among the baggage, but only once he has drawn him out from there. For someone inquires whether the man is still coming here, and the oracle answers, "Behold, he himself is hidden among the baggage." What then does it befit the one who hears this, being by nature suited to instruction, to do, except to draw him out with urgency? For running, it says, he took him from there. 1 Kings 10:22-23, because while he lingered among the vessels of the soul, body, and sense perception, he was not fit to hear the doctrines and laws of the kingdom. And we say that kingship is wisdom, since the wise man too is a king. But once he had migrated away, when the mist had scattered, he was about to see keenly. It is reasonable, then, that the companion of knowledge should think it necessary to leave behind the country of sense perception too, whose name is Haran. He leaves it at the age of 75 years, and this number stands at the boundary between the perceptible and the intelligible nature, between the older and the younger, and further between the perishable and the imperishable. For the number 70 stands for a reckoning that is intelligible, older, and imperishable, while the number 5 stands for one that is perceptible and younger, being equal in count to the senses. By this number, the ascetic still in training is also assessed, since he has not yet been able to carry off the perfect victory prizes, for it is said that all the souls from Jacob were 75, Exod 1, 5. For these are the souls of one who competes and does not corrupt the truly sacred contest for the acquisition of virtue offspring generated before their bodies, but not yet cut free of the irrational, still dragging along the venomous crowd of sense perception. For Jacob is the name of one who wrestles, gets covered in dust, and trips up his opponent by the heel, not of one who has already won. But when he seems capable of seeing God and is renamed Israel, he will use only the 70th word, having excised the pentad of the senses. For it is said, "Your fathers went down into Egypt with 70 souls, Deut. 10, 22. This is the number familiar to Moses the wise. Those chosen from the whole multitude for excellence turn out to number 70, and all of them elders, not in age but in understanding and counsel, in judgment and zeal for ancient ways. This number is consecrated and offered to God whenever the perfect fruits of the soul are gathered in and brought together. For at the Feast of Tabernacles, apart from the other offerings, it is prescribed to bring 70 calves as a whole burnt sacrifice. Num. 29, 13, FF. According to the 70th word, the bowls of the rulers, too, are fashioned, for each weighs 70 shekels num. 7, 13, FF. Since the things that are covenantal, reconciling, and truly dear to the soul possess, as it were, a drawing power, the 70th and holy word, which Egypt, that nature which hates virtue and loves passion, is represented as mourning, for among them the mourning is reckoned at 70 days, Gen 50, 3. This number, then, as I have said, is familiar to Moses. But the number of the 5 senses belongs to him who embraces both the body and external things, whom it is customary to call Joseph. So great is the care he takes of them that his full brother, who is the offspring of sense perception, for he scarcely recognizes those who share only his father. He presents with 5 changes of festal robes, Gen 45, 22, considering the senses worthy of distinguished adornment and honor. For the whole of Egypt he even writes laws, that they should honor the senses and bring them tributes and taxes on every produce as though to kings. For he commands that the grain be taxed a fifth, Gen 47, 24, which means to store up abundant materials and food without stint for the 5 senses, so that each, insatiably filled with its own proper objects, may live in luxury, and weighing down the mind with what is piled upon it, may submerge it. For by the feastings of the senses the understanding is brought to famine, just as, conversely, by fastings it is brought to gladness. Do you not see that the 5 daughters of Zelophehad also, whom those who read allegorically say are the senses, were born of the tribe of Manasseh, who is the son of Joseph, older in time but weaker in power? And rightly so, for he is named from forgetfulness, a thing equivalent in force to remembrance. Now recollection holds second place after memory, whose namesake is Ephraim, who is interpreted as meaning fruit-bearing. And the fairest and most nourishing fruit of the soul is what is unforgettable in one's memories. At any rate, the maidens say, in words that fit their own case, "Our father died, but death is the forgetting of remembrance. And he died not for his own sin, most beautifully said, For forgetfulness is not a voluntary affection, but one of those things not in our power, coming upon us from outside. But he had no sons, none. 27:3. But daughters, since the faculty of memory, as being by nature one that rouses itself, begets males, while the faculty that forgets, making use as it were of the sleep of reasoning, bears females. For it is irrational, and the senses, being daughters of the irrational part of the soul, are female. But if one has run past sense perception swiftly, and has followed Moses, yet has not yet been able to keep pace with him, he will use the mixed and blended number, the 75th, which is a symbol of the sensible and the intelligible nature, both blended together into the generation of one thing free from reproach. I admire greatly also the patient endurance of Rebecca, when she counsels the man made perfect, who has put down the roughness of his passions and vices, to flee at that time to Haran. For she says, "Now therefore, my child, listen to my voice, and rise up and flee to Laban my brother in Haran, and dwell with him some days, until your brother's fury and anger turn away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him." Gen 27:43-45. Most beautifully has she called the road toward the senses a flight, for the mind truly becomes a runaway when, abandoning what belongs properly to it, the intelligible, it turns toward the opposite order, that of the sensible. Yet there are times when even fleeing is useful, when one does it not out of hatred toward the better, but for the sake of not being plotted against by the worse. What, then, is the counsel of this patient endurance? Most admirable and worth fighting for. If ever, she says, you see the passion of anger and fury stirred up and grown savage within yourself or in someone else, the passion that irrational and untamed nature nurtures like an animal, do not sharpen it further and turn it wild, for perhaps it will bite incurably. Rather, cooling its heat and its excessive inflammation, tame it, for should it become tame and gentle to the hand, it would do the least harm. What, then, is the manner of taming and gentling it? Having changed and refashioned yourself, so far as appearances go, follow at first whatever it wishes, and, opposing it in nothing, agree to love and hate the same things, for in this way it will be won over. And once it has been soothed, you will lay aside the pretense, and, no longer expecting to suffer any harm from it, you will return at ease to the care of your own affairs. For this reason, Haran is represented as full of livestock, and inhabited by keepers of cattle. For what place could be more suited to irrational nature, and to those who have taken up its care and oversight than the senses within us? At any rate, when the man in training asks, "Where are you from?" the shepherds answer truthfully, "From Haran, Gen 29:4. For the irrational powers come from sense perception, just as the rational ones come from the understanding. And when he further asks whether they know Laban, they say, reasonably, that they know him, Gen 29:5. For sense perception, it is thought, recognizes color and every quality, and Laban is a symbol of colors and qualities. And he himself, once he has at last been made perfect, will leave the house of the senses, and will settle that of the soul as of the soul, which even while he is still amid his labors and exercises he sketches out in advance. For he says, "When shall I too make a house for myself?" Gen 30:30. That is when, having risen above the sensible things and the senses, shall I dwell with mind and understanding, nourished together and living together with things contemplated by reason, as do those souls that seek out hidden things, whom it is customary to call midwives. For these two make for themselves proper coverings and safeguards, souls that love virtue. And the most secure building of all was the fear of God for those who made it their unbreakable guard and wall. For because, it says, the midwives feared God, they made houses for themselves, Exod 1:21. So then, departing from the region of Haran, the mind is said to journey through the land as far as the place of Shechem, to the lofty oak, Gen 12:6. Let us consider what it is to journey through. The love of learning is by nature a thing that seeks and inquires, that walks everywhere without hesitation, peers in on every side, and holds it right to leave nothing among the things that exist, whether bodies or affairs, unexamined. For it is by nature extraordinarily greedy for sights and sounds, so that it is not content with what is native to it, but longs also for what is foreign and settled at the farthest remove. At any rate, people say it is absurd that merchants and traders, for the sake of paltry gains, should cross the seas and travel round the whole inhabited world, letting nothing stand in their way. Not summer, not winter, not violent winds, not contrary ones, not youth, not old age, not bodily illness, not the company of friends, not the ineffable pleasures found in wife and children and other kin, not the enjoyment of homeland and civic affection, not the secure use of money and property and other abundance, not anything else at all, great or small, while for the sake of the fairest and most fought for thing, and the one most proper to the human race alone, wisdom. They should not cross every sea and visit every corner of the earth, eagerly inquiring whether there is anywhere something good to be seen, and tracking it down with all zeal and eagerness, until it becomes possible to arrive at the enjoyment of the things sought and longed for. Journey, then, O soul, through the human being too, if you wish, bringing each of the things that belong to him to judgment. What, for instance, is the body, and what does it do or undergo that cooperates with the understanding? What is sense perception, and in what way does it benefit the ruling mind? What is reason, and by becoming the interpreter of what things does it contribute to nobility of character? What is pleasure, and what is desire? What are grief and fear, and what is the remedy for these, by which one who has been caught may easily slip free, or else not be captured by them at all? What is folly, what is licentiousness, what is injustice? What is the multitude of other diseases that destructive vice by nature brings forth, and what turns them aside? And on the contrary side, what is justice or prudence or self-control, courage, good counsel, virtue entire and well-being altogether, and in what way each of these is wont to be attained? Journey, then, also through the greatest and most perfect human being, this world, and examine its parts, how they are separated by places yet united by powers, and what is this invisible bond of harmony and union in all things. Yet if, upon examining, you do not easily grasp what you seek, persist without growing weary. For these things are not to be seized in a holiday mood, but are found only with much great labor. For this reason, the lover of learning has taken hold of the place Shechem, whose name, translated, means shoulder, a symbol of labor, since it is these parts that are accustomed to bear burdens, as he himself elsewhere recalls, saying of a certain athlete in this manner. He bowed his shoulder to labor, and became a man who tills the soil, Gen 49:15. So never, O understanding, grow soft and give way, but even if something seems hard to make out, open the eye that sees within you, peer inside, and gaze upon what exists with greater exactness, and never close your eyes, whether willingly or unwillingly, for sleep is blind as waking is sharp-sighted. Be content to gain, through the continuity of your effort, a clear and undistorted impression of the things sought. Do you not see that he says a lofty oak was planted at Shechem too, hinting at the unyielding and unbending, the firm and unbreakable labor of education? This the man who is to become perfect must necessarily make use of, so that the tribunal of the soul, named Dinah, for the name is interpreted as judgment, may not be seized by the labor that toils in the opposite direction, the labor that plots against prudence. For the one after whom this place, Shechem, is named, being the son of Hamor, a nature that is irrational, for Hamor means ass, practiced folly, and raised in shamelessness and boldness, this thoroughly polluted creature attempted to defile and corrupt the tribunals of the understanding, had not the hearers and disciples of Prudence, Simeon and Levi, quickly fenced round what belonged to them and gone out securely against him, cutting him down while he was still in the midst of that labor that loves pleasure and loves passion and is uncircumcised, for there being an oracle that no daughter of him who sees, that is, Israel, should ever become a prostitute dute. 23:17, these men, having seized the virgin soul, hope to escape notice. Gen 34. For it is not the case that there is a want of helpers for those who are treacherously wronged. But even if some suppose there is, they will only suppose it, and will be shown false in their opinion by the very outcome. For there truly is justice, who hates evil, is implacable, and stands as an unyielding champion of those who are wronged, bringing to nothing the aims of those who would shame virtue. And when these have fallen, the soul that seemed to have been shamed changes back into a virgin. I say seemed, because it was never in truth corrupted. For none of the things that happen against one's will is truly an affection of the one who suffers it, just as the deed done is not truly the act of one who does wrong unintentionally.